I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Hi, Marissa.
Hey, how are you?
I am terrific. It's a beautiful sunny day.
Mm-hmm.
Temperatures in the mid-80s. Slight breeze. It doesn't get better than this.
No, it does not.
It does not. But we're not here to talk about the weather, are we?
Nope.
We are supposed to be talking about my last post, which was entitled Your Next Small Step.
Mm-hmm.
Which everybody realizes that last week I talked about the moon
landing.
And so I promised you, as I will promise now our listeners, that I will not dwell long on the moon or the Apollo program or the space program, but I will launch into, how's that for my sad dad pun moment there?
Dad jokes.
Into what my dad joke, into what I meant. But really, seriously now, we talked about it last week.
Yes.
That the way that our nation was able to get to the moon was through an iterative problem-solving model. You know, that they didn't know how to get to the moon. And what I wrote about was, you know, that the president gives out the challenge, and in less than 8 months, or excuse me, 8 months, well, that'd be quick. In less than 8 years, we literally did put two men on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the perceived impossible. It really was, you know, most people, well, we talked last week, there are still some people that don't believe it happened. But it did happen, and it was almost impossible, but it wasn't impossible, because what they did was simply do the next thing. And it got me thinking about something that I heard from one of my mentors, Paul Martinelli. Now, Paul Martinelli is the president of the John Maxwell team, and Paul has his success model, I guess is what you would call it. It's a five-step success model, which is, these are the five steps. You test, you fail, you learn, you improve, you re-enter. Test, fail, learn, improve, re-enter. That's an iterative problem-solving model.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just kind of simplify our dreams to the next step, we might be able to accomplish things that are perceived to be impossible. So then I sent you some notes this morning. And maybe we can kind of walk through that. And then what we can do is we can come back around at the end of the podcast to kind of go back through and have me explain a little bit more of this five-step model of success. So the question that I kind of had is, do people, and this one I didn't send you, do people just not have dreams anymore? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I think it's maybe that people have too many what they think are dreams.
Mm.
Like, you know, we live in this world of social media, and so we see a lot of other people's lives, or what we think is, what we perceive as other people's lives online, and maybe start to think like, oh, that's a dream of mine. Like, oh, a dream of mine is to have a beach house, is to like be on vacation all the time, is to see the world, is to, you know, have a certain kind of life or achieve certain things. And so maybe we have too many of what we think are dreams and don't necessarily have that, you know, one or two very focused, specific, true dreams.
Very good. I never thought of that, because, you know, President Kennedy, on that day in September of 1962, said, we will, by the end of this decade, go to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very defined.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, I think you're right. I think perhaps people have a lot of wants and wishes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll call them dreams, but maybe they aren't thinking them through. They aren't identifying what is, you know, really, really, really important to them.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that they really want? And I like too how you tied into the social media piece. And in my post this morning, I talk about the fact that I think that we, you know, we live in a time when people just put each other down, and there's so much negativity. You know, if you look on Twitter, you know, it's filled with just trashing people, trashing the government, trashing you know, anybody they can, it seems the more people you can get to complain, the more clicks you get in. And maybe that's it, you know, even a lot of the social media is driven by clicks.
Yeah.
So if we can say something inflammatory or critical, we might get somebody to click on that and read the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be really dragging us down. But I like that maybe people have their dreams are too broad, that they haven't sat down to think about what really is important in life. So what are your thoughts on how we could help people discover their dream?
So you did have that question in your notes. So I have kind of had a chance to think about that. But I really don't know. That was a hard one for me to think about.
Okay.
Because I think it is something that is pretty personal.
It's very personal. Yeah.
So like, how can you help someone do that? I think that's a challenge. I think you can foster an environment for people to think outside their box and to be creative and, you know, reach for the stars. Haha.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I don't think it's easy for a person to do this on their own. Because I think I think you might be able to do it if you use an iterative process again of, you know, asking yourself questions. So if I have a coaching client that is struggling with, you know, the future, I'm going to lead them on a path of questions to just say, you know, what do you value in life?
Mm-hmm.
What brings you joy? Not happiness, joy. You know, what activities speak to your life? Even in my intake documents that I give out to my coaching clients, and a lot of times they get really frustrated because they're tough. But, you know, what needs in the world do you feel you were created to meet is one of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you, you know, John Maxwell's, what makes you sing? What makes you cry? And if you start identifying some of those things, you're going to be able to narrow in on at least areas of where a dream might be. So I think you need a thinking partner to help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the keys is it's not just a vague, well, this is what I'd like someday. You know, if we think about Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, you know, it was, you have to truly define that goal so well that you can write it out. And when you can write out that goal or that dream, and you let it age for a while, once you determine that that's exactly where I want to go, if you read that every morning and every night, you know, you begin to see the opportunities, you begin to see the resources all around you, and then you simply do the next thing that presents itself. So I think, you know, the key there is this thinking process of how they can distill down the difference between a want and a dream, because I think they're different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people would want a beach house. Well, that might not be necessarily a dream for your life. Because imagine if you finally get the beach house, but you have no one to enjoy it with.
Mm-hmm.
So those could be some things there. So that's a really hard one. And maybe, you know, maybe someday you and I will put our heads together and we'll have a better discussion on discovering your dream. Why do people quit so soon? So people, let's say they found their dream, but they just quit because, you know, it kind of boils up to this thing about us as settling. We settle for mediocre restaurants. We settle for mediocrity in life. We don't strive for excellence. So why is it that you think people quit?
I mean, I think it's a few things. I think we're easily distracted.
Yep.
I think that we lose momentum and that causes us to quit.
Yep.
And I think, you know, if we face a little bit of failure along the way or perceived failure, it's like, well, there it goes.
Yep. I like that how you said perceived failure. You know, if you truly have a dream, if you truly have an objective, a goal, failure is not something that can stop you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to go back to Apollo 1, where we lost 3 astronauts on the launch pad. Well, we didn't just say, okay, this is too dangerous, we're not going to go. No, we learned from it. What did we learn from it? How do we adjust it? So I actually had somebody say to me, a coaching client said to me last week, he was talking about three things that really get him excited. One is people saying they don't know how to do something, which I thought, why does that get you excited? Well, he says, if they admit that they don't know it, there's a learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. And he thinks it's a real positive when someone says, hey, I don't know how to do this. Another one was failure. And he said, you know, failure is the best tool to learn. You see what you did wrong. If you can do an autopsy on a failure, wow, you can unpack all kinds of information that's valuable for you to put into the next thing you're going to try, mm-hmm. or your second attempt, so to speak. If we think about that, as Paul Martinelli was saying, you know, you test, you fail, you learn, you improve, you re-enter. That's just the way you learn. Mm-hmm. And that's really where all the excitement can come from. And then the other one was success. He says success is a good thing to him. He says he likes success. I'm one of those people where I get a little bit concerned about success because I think it can be truly bad and it can truly distract us from things. In fact, I had a meeting today where I was invited to be part of a book study somewhere in a company in Auburn. And the neat part was they were talking about the fact that they all agreed that success can be very detrimental to us. Mm-hmm. Because it actually what we were talking about was the book Good to Great. And so they said that, you know, good is the enemy of great. And success makes you think you're great when you might only be good. I thought, well, that's a pretty deep statement right there. So I think, again, I'm going back to that question about, you know, why do people quit so soon? I think you're right. The failure piece is there, and then they just perceive it as something that they have to stop because they can't get there. Mm-hmm. Why do we settle?
Because it's easy.
I'm still struggling with that one. Pardon me?
Because it's easy.
Because it's easy, yeah. Yeah. I'm struggling with that question. That's why I asked you to think about it. Why is it that people settle for mediocrity?
There's that saying, done is better than perfect, or good is better than perfect, which, you know, in some situations that is important. We're not necessarily striving for perfection, but uh-huh. I think we've kind of gotten into that mindset. Like, okay, it's not great, but it's good. It's good enough. It'll get me through, or I'm halfway there and that's good enough for me. So yeah. I think it's just kind of like easier. And it kind of goes back to that, like, we're distracted people. We, you know, squirrel, and we're chasing it.
Yes.
So I think it's like, okay, well, like, this is good enough. I'll move on to the next thing.
Sure.
Because we do have, I think we do have, you know, currently in our culture, like, people, I think, do want to achieve things. It's not mm-hmm. like a laziness kind of thing. It's more like maybe almost it feels like a race. It's like, okay, well, like, this is good enough, and I can move on to the next thing and tackle that and accomplish that, instead of really focusing on what we really, really want and those dreams and chasing that. But maybe it's a little more short term than long term.
Okay.
I don't know. I did a lot of speculating there.
No, that's fine. Hey, all we're doing is speculating on this one, because what I really want to do is challenge people to think about that, you know, because mm-hmm. the next question we're going to talk about is, you know, how can we get into the practice of striving for excellence? Mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's easy. It's just easy. And we as leaders allow people to coast. Mm-hmm. And just get by. You know, I talked about this in a podcast, you know, a couple months ago, where I said, you know, the best people are your greatest asset, not just people, the right people, so to speak, as Jim Collins puts it. So we settle when we just put somebody in the seat because we don't want to have an empty seat, rather than waiting for the best person, mm-hmm. the right person for that position. So I think we allow ourselves to get lulled into this. Yeah, it's okay as leaders. And then we don't make people strive. You know, I remember hearing a review that was done one of my coaching clients was a bit discouraged because the review that they were going to give to their direct report had been overruled in terms of the language by their boss. Mm-hmm. And basically, there was a mediocre performer who was going to get a good review. I'm like, you can't do that. Well, they didn't want to have the drama of, well, then don't expect the person to get any better, right, type of thing.
Right.
I think so the key there might be is if we're thinking on a corporate side now, so if I don't want my team to strive for mediocrity, I can't be striving for mediocrity. Mm-hmm. I have to lead. I have to get up and say, I'm not accepting this. There are no shortcuts. Mm-hmm. I actually put this, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's up in my office and it says no shortcuts ever. Because I don't believe that we should take shortcuts, mm-hmm, in anything we do. Because as soon as we do, we're not accepting excellence. I remember the very first John Maxwell certification meeting that I went to, training that I went to, where John said, if you're not willing to promise to give 100% every time you get in front of people, go to the back of the room now and we'll give you your money back.
Wow.
Because he said, this team always strives for excellence. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, in what they've done for me, it always has been excellent. Now, I will clarify that. So Paul Martinelli is the president of the John Maxwell team. He will give us materials that are not perfect, but they don't stay imperfect. Like, he'll put something out that's just, he goes, here, give this a try. Let's see if we can make this work. But he's always improving it. It's always getting better. And that, I think, is the difference between somebody that says, well, I'm going to wait till it's perfect to release it. Well, we never release it.
Right. Right.
But and he releases it knowing it's going to get better.
The difference between like perfection and excellence.
Exactly. Yes. And I love that. That's the difference between perfection and excellence. Excellence is the best I can do right now, not taking shortcuts. And it, mm-hmm, continually improves and gets better.
Because something can look perfect, right? Like on paper, everything's spelled, yeah, right. The grammar's there. The design is nice. The color is nice. It looks perfect. But if it's not, if it is lacking in excellence, that's right, what people are paying for. When you're talking about this training, it's like, it's not, it's the content. And so that's where the, exactly, excellence has to come in, not perfection. Right. Because it's not finite. And right, it's a little bit different. They're different things.
Exactly. The content's just, if the content isn't there, it can look as pretty as possible, mm-hmm, but it's still not gonna fly, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think getting into the practice of striving for excellence is just it's a choice that we make every day, mm-hmm, that I am going to be better today than I was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then the question comes into, so what happens if we weren't? What happens if it failed? Well, we go back through, we learn, we improve, and we re-enter the next day. Mm-hmm. If I'm not measuring up to what I want, there's a reason. And too often we allow our brains to tell us that we're the reason that something didn't work, when in fact it was the plan that failed. So somebody's going to say, wait a minute, it's willpower. Well, there's your first problem. Relying on willpower is not a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to give yourself the structure around your goals so that you don't rely on willpower to do it. One of the examples that I remember reading once was somebody that wanted to run every morning, and he said, I love it once I'm up, but he said, if I get up and I have to think about what am I going to put on to run and where are my running shoes, I'm not going to do it. So he said, I sleep in my shorts and the t-shirt that I'm going to run in, mm-hmm, and my running shoes are next to the bed. Mm-hmm. So he said, the first thing I do when I get out of bed, slide into those shoes and I'm out the door. Because he said, the hard part I've structured. So that's the way we kind of practice striving for excellence. The other thing is really letting our team know that we're not going to accept it. We're, mm-hmm, not going to accept it until it is absolutely their best work. Now, there's a little joke that I hear every time I go to a John Maxwell training, where one of our mentors refers to, you know, Paul, as he said, I gave Paul my outline for this training, and he wrote it back and said, this is not your best work. I may have shared this on a podcast before. And he says, so I worked on it and I tweaked it and I sent it back. And I got back, are you sure this is your best work? So he said, so I worked on it a little bit more. And then he finally sends it to Paul. And he says, Paul, this is absolutely my best work. And he goes, okay, now I'll read it.
I knew you were going to say that.
So, you know, yeah. You only got to do that a couple times till somebody realizes, I really want you to slow down and give me the best stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, this is an iterative process. It's not, we're not saying we're going to go to the moon tomorrow. We're saying we're going to be better every day. Mm-hmm. And we're going to test, fail, learn, improve, re-enter. And that's the way we get on this trajectory toward great growth. The last one, excuse me, of the note that I gave was, how do we break the cycle of negativity? You know, what does it look like to break that cycle? What were your thoughts on that one?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things you could probably do. I was trying to think of like what would be the most surefire way. I don't know. I mean, I think just keeping a positive outlook and the mindset that like you have to keep pushing forward. And like you said, making every day better than the last, being better with every day. I don't know. That's not a good answer.
Yeah, you know, no, that's a fine answer. I think the key is we have to just say we refuse to dwell on negativity. And so if we remember back, this might have been a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, the podcast of you need three positives to every negative. Mm-hmm. And so are we building in those positive things? So this was kind of like a reminder for our listeners. Are we building in the positive things? Are we ditching our negative friends? I know that sounds horrible, but we've got to separate ourselves from people that drag us down.
Yes.
You know, and people say, well, that's just not fair. I say, all right, so here's my logic. We get one life on this earth. How do you want to spend it? Do you want to spend it with people that are negative and miserable and complain about other people? I don't. So I'm going to find positive people. It was interesting. I kind of did a little bit of a survey, like when I go to some of our Maxwell events and just to see how people interact. And there are so many positive interactions going on. It's crazy. They're just, you know, there are people hugging each other. There's people waving at each other. There's people smiling at each other. They're complimenting the servers in the hotel. They're, you know, something falls on the floor. They're picking it up. They're throwing it in the garbage. They're not expecting somebody else to do it. And the reason is because that group primarily is focused on achieving excellence and being positive. Mm-hmm. They'll call in. I was at one training, a small group training, where the trainer called in the hotel staff so that we could give them a standing ovation. And the one hotel worker literally had tears in her eyes. She probably had never experienced anything like that. Well, isn't that sad? So you just decide, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to hang with people that are happy.
Yep.
Now that gets hard when they're your family members, but you know, it's the example I've told before where my mom told her sister, if every time you call me, you're going to be negative, I'm not going to call you for a while. Well, she stopped being negative because she wanted to talk to her sister. There you go. That's what you need to do. So I want to circle back now to Paul's success model, which I believe is exactly how we got to the moon. And I promise this is the last episode until April of next year when I get to talk about Apollo 13. So, but I won't talk about it till then. So what we have to do, we have to have our dream, we have to have our goal, we have to have our objective, and the first thing we do is we test. We implement the next step, and we're going to fail. We know we're going to fail, because nothing that is worth doing is easy. So it's going to be a challenge. There's going to be failure. We fail, we learn, we make the adjustment, we improve, and we re-enter. We do the whole thing over again. So it's test, fail, learn, improve, re-enter. And if you do that, if you have a well-defined goal and you do that, you absolutely will achieve your goal. Mm-hmm. because every day you learn something that you apply. And it's that simple. And that's how we got to the moon. How's that?
That was a smooth landing.
It was a smooth landing. We didn't splash down in the Pacific. I have no idea what I'm talking about next week.
I know.
I'm writing about next week. So it'll come to me.
I kind of shut down your original idea.
Yeah, you did. Well, it's okay because you need to do that. You need to keep me honest. Just because I'm excited about something doesn't mean everybody will be. So, and people probably want to know if the boat ran, don't they?
I was going to ask, but I didn't know if it was a touchy subject.
It's not a touchy subject. So the boat ran, the engine ran extremely well. The first time we fired it up, it ran so well, we didn't even have to adjust the timing on the engine. The problem was, I realized I was pushing it really close, and I didn't want to be stuck in a lake with something that was going to give me a hard time. The starter was acting up, and so I've ordered a new starter. But anyways, so I did not have the boat in the boat show. It still was a great boat show.
Next
weather
year.
Was gorgeous. Yeah, there'll be a time. It will have its time,
mm-hmm.
and all will be well. But at least the hard part, and I said to my son Jeremy, I said, Jeremy, look, this is amazing. The hard part is we took this thing completely apart, and we put it all back together ourselves, mm-hmm. and it ran.
Mm-hmm.
He did a great job, and now I just got to fix the starter. So the other thing that made it really confirmed that I made the right decision. Was when I got to the boat show, I heard that a week before a boat had actually exploded in Hammondsport, New York.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, two people on it were hurt. One was airlifted, one or two, both were airlifted to Strong Memorial. And those are things that can happen if you rush through something.
Yep. So. Gotta be safe. Safety
gotta
first.
Be safe. Yeah. Any plans for the weekend?
Yes. My little baby Lena is turning one.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Wow, did that go quick?
Yeah, you know, I say it was fast and slow all at the same time. Anyone that has children will understand. But yes, yep. She will be one on the 4th.
Wow.
So by the time this airs, she'll already be one. But so we're having a party for her. And awesome. We'll see. We have a smash cake because, you know, that's a thing.
Okay.
And we'll see. I don't think she's going to really like it.
Okay.
But it's entertaining for all.
Sure.
So we have family in town and we have more family coming into town. So it'll be.
That's great.
The weather's going to be beautiful.
Super.
Be a good time.
Happy birthday, Lena.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.